This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR.
Kia ora, you're listening to MPR, Te Reo Irirangi, on a tangata o Manawatu. This is Rachel Dore, bringing you words from the bubble. Each week I chat with a New Zealander who knows about writing and books, no matter where in the world they're living. You'll hear conversations with all kinds of authors and writers in all genres. Although some of our guests have been among New Zealand's award-winning, internationally celebrated authors, Words from the Bubble also supports those who are independently published. It's a potluck show. A guest may be an established author, a new writer, a writing tutor, an editor, a researcher, or someone from the matrix that makes up the publishing industry. And when we're lucky, we're treated to a reading. Former high school teacher, active feminist, and rainbow community supporter, bookshop owner Carol Bew was recently awarded the New Zealand Order of Merit for services to the literary industry. Carol Bew opened the women's bookshop in Auckland back in the 80s. It was a time when women were re-evaluating their role and their contribution in society. Feminists were in the forefront, in other words. We wanted books written by women. We wanted to read a woman's perspective. And women's history, her story, we called it. We wanted literature that deepened our understanding of ourselves, of women's experience, and the experience of women who'd gone before us. The women's bookshop has been described as a happy place, not only for Carol and her team, but for hundreds of other women who have been through the bookshop over the years. And a strong community of literary supporters has evolved. Carol was one of a team who inaugurated the Auckland Writers' Festival with Stephanie Johnson and Peter Wells and others. And the Women's Bookshop continues to run various literary events through the year. Google or go to www.womensbookshop.co.nz and you'll see the wealth of literature available. And you can sign up for their newsletter and keep up to date with reviews. And I'm very honoured to have Carol Bew with me today. Kia ora, welcome to Words from the Bubble, Carol.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here, Rachel.
And I feel quite starstruck because I've admired what you've done, because it was very brave in those early days when you first started the women's bookshop, wasn't it?
Well, Rachel, I didn't see it as brave at all, and I didn't think I was brave, mainly because I had absolutely no idea what I was doing, really. I was a secondary school English and drama teacher. I'd always been into books, obviously. I was friends with one or two of the women involved in the Broadsheet Collective, particularly Pat Rosier, the late, great Pat Rosier, who was the editor at the time. And they had had a collective meeting and decided that the premise they had in Dominion Road really wasn't suitable for their office that had a shop front, and they didn't have enough money to buy books to run their very tiny bookshop. And they decided that what they needed was someone to take over their lease and run a proper women's bookshop, a feminist bookshop, and they would get an office premise somewhere else to run the magazine from. So Pat came to me with this proposal and said they'd have this discussion, and they tossed around lots of names at the collective meeting, and they'd come up with me, and I was totally astonished. It took a bit of persuading. It took several months of Pat sort of, you know, forcing my arm up my back before I thought, well, I could give it a go. And I could always fall back on teaching if it fails. There was another friend who got a bit interested with me at the time because she knew more about the finances than me. She knew what a cash flow forecast was, and I didn't. And I visited some of the other bookshops, like A woman's place in Wellington was still operating. Tilly Lloyd was involved in that, and she now has been involved for years in Unity Books Wellington. There was the bookshop in Christchurch was still going. It was the Kate Shepherd Women's Bookshop in Christchurch. That's now long gone, and we're the only remaining one in New Zealand. And in fact, we're probably one of the few remaining ones in the world. There are still women's bookshops in the States and in Germany, and we do get a lot of German women in particular visiting us because they know about us. But I started off really knowing very little, and I learned by doing. There were a lot of women in the publishing industry, as there always have been, and they were a huge help. The women in those bookshops, but also the women in publishing. So Helen Benton, for example, who with her partner Bob Ross were running, they eventually ran Tandem Press. I think they were Benton Ross at the time. They took me around their warehouse and held my hand and said, buy two of that and one of that, six of that, and not none of that, and guided me about what to stock. At that stage, they were importing alternative publishers from the States, gay and lesbian, feminist, all sorts of interesting stuff. And then, you know, Karen Ferns, who's been in the book industry for years and years, was the marketing director for Penguin Books at the time, and she was a huge help. There were lots of women who were very generous with their time and advice, and I started off knowing nothing, really, but had a lot of help. Yeah, so it wasn't brave because I had, and I also didn't know that something like, you know, more than half of small businesses fail in the first 3 years. I knew nothing about that sort of thing. I was a teacher. So,
just as well you didn't know.
Yes, it was a good thing I didn't know. Yes, yes.
And so you've actually, with the help of these really good, supportive friends and acquaintances, yes, you've actually learned as you've gone along.
Yes. The other thing is, I think I had skills that I would not have recognised, in that I was organising in the days when I was in big secondary schools. You had seven periods a day and you had 35 kids in your class. So you were actually organising 35 teenagers seven times a day. And I had two children of my own. So I actually had quite good organisation skills and quite good people skills that I would never have, you just did it. I didn't even recognise it until someone said, well, actually, they probably send businesses send young men on training courses with fancy names to learn the sort of skills you've already got. But women often don't recognise, I think, the skills that they have.
Well, and men don't recognise the skills women have.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Those so-called domestic skills actually prepare women for a lot of very serious work in the wider world.
Yes, I agree, yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. So here you are, 25 years, is it?
25? No, it's 34 years. I was 10 years in Dominion Road and we moved to Ponsonby coming up in April, 24 years ago. I must just tell you about the move. The move was fascinating because it made me understand that what had happened was that the bookshop had become something more than just a bookshop. Mm. The customers actually moved the shop. When they heard we were going to move to Ponsonby, they started offering to help us. And initially I said, oh, no, we'll be fine. But then eventually so many people offered to help us that we started taking down names and phone numbers. And we moved on a Saturday. And on that day, lots and lots of customers, I mean dozens of customers, turned up with cars and trucks and trailers and vans. And one of the reps from Penguin Random House came with flattened cartons, and he taped up cartons and handed them to them all the time. And they worked in pairs. And they literally moved one section. And then they came to Ponsonby and brought their cartons in and unloaded the set. We had bits of paper up saying, you know, that if they moved the teenage section, for example, then they came, found a bit of paper that said teenage above these shelves in the Ponsonby shop, and they unpacked the cartons and they literally moved the shop. And I understood then that there was a sense of community ownership of the shop. The women owned the shop. It was their shop. And that was, it was quite moving, really. It was extraordinary. I hadn't quite understood, you know, that had happened. So that I'm very grateful for them.
That's a very inspiring story. So you spearheaded something, started a business, and then found yourself part of something bigger.
Yes, absolutely. And we've always had volunteers to help us. Not so much now, but for many years we published a physical newsletter. I mean, it's all online now. But we published a book choice newsletter, for example, and it had to be stuffed into envelopes and posted out to people. And we did it, you know, perhaps every 6 weeks or so. And a whole team of women would come and I would provide some wine and cheese and they would sit around and literally stuff the newsletters into envelopes one evening. And we've had volunteers help us run all sorts of events. I mean, particularly the Ladies Literati, which is our Literatea, our big afternoon tea event, which we do every year. That for years was run by volunteers. I'm now in a position, luckily, where I can afford to pay the women who actually helped me to run it. And that's very gratifying.
Wow. No. So you are literally at the coalface where the publishing industry, the whole book industry meets the buyer. But there is something else stretching, strung out between those two factors, and that is authors.
Yes.
So you do have events, author events, do you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. All the
signing
time. Yes.
This and that.
Yeah.
Yes.
We all sorts of different things. I mean, we often do book launches in the shop. And we provide food and wine and, have the guest authors and invite, they will bring their own family and friends, but then, we'll invite our audience as well. So we'll send out an e-news and invite all our people to come. And they're very successful. We also do sometimes bigger events. I mean, the biggest one is obviously the Ladies Literati. And I mean, my aim is to promote New Zealand women writers. And so we will have, I used to have 12, I've cut it down to 11, it was slightly too many, on a Sunday afternoon for the Ladies Literati. Six beforehand, it's held in the theatre at Epsom Girls. It's a lovely theatre, but it also has a very big rehearsal, an empty rehearsal room next door to it, where we can set out this lavish afternoon tea. So we have six authors before afternoon tea. We break for a long afternoon tea, and authors sign their books. And then the other five writers come on afterwards. And it's wonderful, wonderful event. It sells out every year. It's at a Sunday, usually at the end of October. And, the women themselves enjoy meeting each other. Some of the authors have never met each other before. But the audience love it, and we sell heaps of their books. It's a really, really good promotional event for those women writers. And publishers, contact me quite early in the year often to say, I've got a woman I think would be good for your Ladies Literati later in the year. Yes. I've done a lot of bigger events as well. I mean, I've been involved in the Auckland Writers Festival from the beginning. I'm not on the board anymore. I'm getting too old. I was on it for years and years. I sat around Stephanie Johnson's kitchen table 20-odd years ago with Peter Wells and the group of us who sort of dreamt up the whole thing. Well, it was Peter and Stephanie's idea, and a whole lot of us got involved. And I was on the board for years, and I still chair events at the Auckland Writers Festival. But I also did, before that I was involved in the Listener Women's Book Festival, which a lot of people have forgotten about. For the whole decade of the 90s, the Listener Women's Book Festival was run nationally, completely by volunteers. So Penny Hanson was the national coordinator. I was the Auckland coordinator. And then there were volunteer groups all over New Zealand in quite small places sometimes. And we toured authors all over the place. It was absolutely wonderful. And the Listener was a supporter in that they gave us space. They gave us free space in the Listener to promote the whole thing, or they interviewed the authors and so on. I then ran women's book weekends after that, and then the Auckland Writers Festival starts. So the Auckland Writers Festival was sort of a progression on from there. And then I've done other just one-off events, like years ago I organised an event with Margaret Atwood that Kim Hill interviewed her at Auckland Girls. Yeah, so there are a lot of events like that. But and the most recent big one like that is A Still Life. Sarah Winman. Winman came to New Zealand. The publisher, she was in Australia for a literary festival. The publisher brought her over for about 2 days, and they said, we've got her in Auckland for one night, will you run an event? So I ran an event with several hundred women for her at Auckland Girls, and that was only a few months ago. And just an amazing evening. I chaired that one, and she was just fantastic. She's one of my favourite authors at the moment, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sarah Winman, so generous and warm and writes beautiful characters. I love her work. So good. It was a real honour to talk with her in public, yes.
Now, as part of the question about being on the interface, tell me a bit about why the women's bookshop. It's not just another bookshop. This is women's bookshop. So tell me about your passion for women's literature and why it was important at that time back in the 80s.
Well, it's still important because the reality is men's words are taken more seriously. We still live in a patriarchy. Men talk serious business and women gossip. I mean, that's simplifying it, but that's still the basis of it. And I mean, you look at, anthologies come out sometimes of, the best 100 books you ought to read, or these are the books you should read before you die, or this is my particular reading list. And I immediately look down at and look at how many women there are. There are always more men. So men's work is taken more seriously. So I deliberately try to promote women authors. But also, on the whole, I enjoy them more. I relate to them more. We still live in a world where we need to promote women. And the women's bookshop is a safe women's space. Women feel comfortable coming in here. Yeah. I remember Jacinda coming in. Wonderful, Jacinda. Coming in, and I looked around and said, oh, no security, Jacinda. And she said, they're out on the pavement, Carol. The women's bookshop is the safest place in New Zealand. So that was a lovely thing for her to say. Yeah. So women do feel comfortable coming. It's a warm, inviting environment, and the staff are they're well read, but they have very good customer relations skills. They're knowledgeable and warm and talk to people, and it's a special place for women.
In the beginning, it was a sigh of relief to walk into the women's bookshop because you didn't have to look for women authors. Because they were there. Yes. And what's more, they weren't just there, but there was a huge range of people that we hadn't had the opportunity to hear from because they were usually hidden away. There were bookshops that had hardly any female authors at all.
Right.
So it was a huge relief to walk into the women's bookshop and be among women looking for women writers. It was an almost magical experience to be there.
That's lovely to hear. Thank you. There have been times where we've almost been in a counselling sort of role, because occasionally coming in to buy a book is the first step a woman takes towards solving some sort of problem. And I think with relationship problems, particularly, it's the women who do something about it. And also women who are wondering if they could possibly be lesbian or just wondering. So problems in relationships, problems with children, wondering about, your sexual orientation, that sort of thing, they feel safe coming in and asking for a book or asking advice about books. And so, I mean, none of us are qualified as counsellors, but I think we've learned to be quite good at listening and good at recommending things that we think might be helpful. So that's a really nice role we've played. But I should also add that we do have a lot of men customers, and we never ever have problems with men because the men who come self-select to come. So they're educated men. And they're often buying gifts for their wives, daughters, girlfriends, friends, and so on. And they're also buying things for themselves. So we do have a lot of men customers, and we do have a lot of books by men, but only the best of the books by men. But those male customers, they self-select to come here. So and occasionally we'll get one at the door saying, is it okay if I come in? And they ask it politely and seriously. And I say, yes, you are most welcome. You occasionally hear a bloke going past on the Ponsonby pavement and say, hello, women's bookshop. What's that about? But they don't come in. They walk past.
So how do you choose? Let's go back a little bit. You were mentioning publishers recommending books or keeping in touch with you. Yes. So publishers have their publicists who keep you abreast of new releases.
Yes.
So you're able to choose. How do you choose?
Well, the reps come in regularly. I have rep appointments all the time, so I still do the buying. I think over the years I've developed a good instinct about what to choose. The reps come from all the major publishing companies. So some reps I'll see once a month, some I'll see, once a week or once a fortnight. And they're selling usually 3 months in advance. So I've already bought what I'm going to buy for March, and they're selling me April at the moment. And it's a combination of the really good reps know the different shops. They'll know what suits Unity Books. They'll know what suits the women's bookshop and so on. Some of them have already said, oh, don't bother with that, don't bother with that, don't bother with that. Now, have a look at this one. So there's a bit of selecting already gone on for me. And then I will look at it. And I mean, I know a lot of the authors by name. And it's exciting when there's a new book coming from a big author, like the new Barbara Kingsolver we've had for Christmas, Demon Copperhead. Wow, got a new Barbara Kingsolver for Christmas. That's fantastic. So obviously you order heaps of that. Other things, I hum and ha. I mean, the good thing is that you can return things that don't work. My returns are quite low because I've got quite skilled at choosing what I know is going to sell. Occasionally something doesn't work and we are able to return it. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a certain gatekeeping goes on. You can't have everything, and you have to have an instinct to know what's going to work for your shop. And I guess if you sort of know your audience, and I don't quite know how I do it really, but I'm quite good at it, I think.
Mm. No, there's a touch of serendipity going on.
Yes. Yeah.
What makes a book not work? Have you worked that out?
Not really. Our clientele are quite literary, well educated on the whole, and quite literary. And so we sell a lot of fiction. We sell a lot of good literary fiction. So all the women's book groups, for example, and the men's ones as well, they tend to be readers, and so they read literary fiction. What doesn't work is more commercial sort of fiction that is a bit... I don't know, the character development is not as deep and so on. There's been a problem lately with TikTok books. Some of the, TikTok made me buy it sort of idea. Some of them are very shallow, and they're being asked for because they've been promoted on social media, and they're not necessarily. But there are some young women particularly who are reading them, and so we'll stop them so they can read them, because it's better to be reading those than not reading.
Yeah, it could be a way in.
Yes,
it could be a way in for young readers. So
the other difficulty we have is, and it's a good thing and a bad thing, is self-published books.
Oh, I had a question about that.
Oh, did you? Yeah. It's very easy to self-publish these days. And I want to say to writers why. There are so many books. I mean, I'm shown hundreds and hundreds of books that I turn down and don't order. Why have you written another one? You need to be really sure that it's good. And for some authors, I think they need to publish just, a couple of hundred copies and give it to their families and friends. And it's not going to be saleable in bookshops, and we have to turn down a lot of self-published books. But then suddenly someone will walk in with something that is utterly beautiful, and they've put their heart and soul into it, and you look at it and the production values are outstanding, and I know it's going to appeal to people, so I will order some. That's rare. I also think the self-published authors need to know to send an email and give a lot of information about the book, and then ask for an appointment if the book's out. Don't cold call, in other words. Don't walk into a bookshop and say, I've written a book, because, you're busy. They forget that you're working, and that they may be the fifth person that day who's done it, So it's a bit of a problem. I mean, the thing with being published by a publisher is that there's been some editing, some gatekeeping's gone on. A publisher has thought it's worth publishing. So, So it can be a problem, but it can also be a good thing, because every now and again you get an absolute gem.
Yeah, yeah. And so you basically, listeners who are aspiring authors or those indie publishers, indie authors, I should say, they've heard this story before, but it never tires to tell people about the production of the book, and checking then editing and proofreading and making sure it's a good quality piece of work.
The cover is beautiful. But then once they've actually got the product, what a lot of self-published authors don't understand is, how is anybody going to know that they've written it? How is anybody going to know it exists? That's what your publicists, as you mentioned before, do in the big publishing companies. They're going to promote the book. Mm. So it has to be promoted. It has to be sold to people.
That's right.
We helped a couple of sisters recently who've produced a beautiful little book on working with their mother who had Alzheimer's, and they've produced a beautiful book, and I actually gave them the names and the contacts of people in other bookshops around the country that they should contact. It was so beautifully done, and I said, you need to say, and I don't mind if you say, Carol from the Women's Bookshop said, you ought to have a look at this book. But I really do that. Yeah, it's got to be
something. Tell us the name and tell us the title and the name of the author for that book. Please.
I've just got to get it, to get my hand on it to tell you.
Fair enough.
It's called Dementia with Love. And it's Karen Sarah and Robin Lamont, Dementia with Love. And it's a beautiful little book full of gorgeous images. They've done photography and poetry and just thoughts about how they dealt with their mother's dementia. And I know a number of people now who are dealing with partners or parents or someone with dementia. And I just think it's going to be really, really helpful little book. It's going to be a comforting book. Mm. And so I think it's worth other bookshops having a look at. But and also they need to put it on Nielsen Book Data and probably on Fort Belka as well. So that's the other thing that self-published authors don't understand. They need to have their book listed on Nielsen Book Data online. It's a free service. It needs a cover image and a blurb about the book. And that's the way that any English-speaking bookshop in the world will find that book. So if someone walks into me and says, now there's some sisters who've written a book about dementia, I'll be able to find it because I can put dementia in and New Zealand and any information I've got, and the book will come up, and then the bookseller knows who to order it from.
There so we are.
Crucial yes. information.
And libraries too use yes. that. Use those. Yes. Yes. Now, you mentioned just a little bit earlier, you were saying how self-published authors sometimes, and I know I've heard a story of someone walking around with a bag full of books, going from bookshop to bookshop. Mm. And I heard you say, there was a hint of in what you said that people forget that you're busy.
Yes.
So tell us a bit about what people are surprised by about the life of a bookseller who owns a bookshop, because I think they think you're, you know, like a pig in muck, just having a marvelous time. Enjoying every day, which you probably do, but then imagine you just sit there reading and again, money.
Yeah, you wouldn't get one moment to read during the day. You're absolutely flat out. You're answering emails, you're answering phone calls, and you're serving customers, but you're also ordering the books, you're returning the books, you're carrying heavy cartons. I mean, I'm getting quite old now, but I'm still good at picking up heavy cartons and packing and unpacking heavy cartons. I don't know how people think the books get on the shelves, but they have to be processed when they arrive. And that, you know, you get 8 or 12 or 20 cartons in a day, and you've got to actually receive them into stock and process them all and price them all. And that can take several hours. So the activities vary, but and you've got to get all the recycled cardboard out and taken away. And there's endless jobs you have to do. And it's actually quite hard work. And I think people think of working in a bookshop as being a very ideal thing, which it is in lots of ways, because you also have wonderful conversations with customers about books and you recommend books. And the joy of putting the right book in someone's hand and knowing they're happy with it is lovely. I write little notes on the books, on a little piece of card that I actually blue tack onto the front of the top book, saying what I thought about it, or the ones I've read. Obviously, I haven't read everything, but that helps people choose, because there's so much to choose from, that I will write my recommendations and what I thought about it on the front, and it does help people to select. So, but there's a lot of hard work involved. It's not all sitting around just reading books, that's for sure.
No. And processing, that's interesting, because I heard about someone who had been waiting for a new release.
Yeah.
She heard that it was in the bookshop. So right. She went in to buy it, but they hadn't processed it. And she was annoyed. And they told
her. Well, they might have had 20 cartons to process that day and they hadn't quite got to it yet.
That's right. And processing means entering it into your computer system.
Yes.
Cataloging.
It's probably already in there, because what we do is when the rep sells me the books, I've got the order, and we actually put it in the computer ahead of time. So if someone says, there's a new book coming out from blah, blah, we can look it up on the computer and say, oh, yes, it's due in March or it's due in April. We've got some on order. We'll let you know when it arrives, and we attach their name to it. And as soon as that we actually unpack it, we let them know that it's arrived. Mm. But, yeah, there have been occasions where someone's come in for a book that they've had on order, and we'll say, oh, hang on, some cartons from that publisher have just arrived. Let me find the invoice. We haven't unpacked them yet, but let me find the invoice. And you can find the carton with the invoice and go through the invoice and say, yes, it's here now. Just let us find it. And we have to unpack all these books to find the particular one they want. But we will generally do that for someone, because we've got to unpack
them
for that day anyway. Yes.
That's good service. Now, at NPR, we go for a break about now. Let's do that now, and we'll come back. I have a few more questions.
Okay.
None of them particularly curly, but I'm coming from a place of, as an author and a buyer. So, So, this is Rachel DeRay talking to Carol Bew at the famous, the Women's Bookshop in Ponsonby, Auckland. And Words from the Bubble will be back in just a few minutes.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. NPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out npr.nz for more information.
You're back with Rachel DeRay and Words from the Bubble, talking to Carol Bew up in Auckland at the Women's Bookshop. I read somewhere, Carol, that you have a staggering tower of books that you're supposed to read, or people think you ought to read. How do you make your way through that?
Well, and publishers hope I will read that. If I read advanced reading copies and like them, I will order more, and I will hand sell them by recommending them to customers. Someone came into my bedroom once and described them as a New York skyline, these sort of teetering towers of books, that some of which fall over occasionally. Some of the current pile, some of the pile I hope I'll get to, some of the pile I probably won't get to. You know, I don't watch television. I read in the evenings. And, I don't get through as much as I would like to. But I do read mainly fiction, although occasionally I read a non-fiction. Like, for example, one of the books I read recently was Gaylene Preston's book, Gaylene's Take, about her. And it's an autobiographical book about her life in the New Zealand film industry. It was absolutely brilliant. It was so Gaylene. She writes the way she talks. A lot of it was funny. A lot of it was extraordinary about how difficult it was for women to actually make films and get them then shown in New Zealand. I loved it. That was a wonderful example of a non-fiction book. But And also Gaylene was in our last Ladies Literati, so I would always read the books of the women who were in that. But I mainly read literary fiction. So obviously I will read the first ones on the pile would be the ones that are big authors. Like I'm going to read the Barbara Kingsolver as soon as it came out, as soon as I got a reading copy. Before the stock arrived, I had already read it. The Demon Copperhead, it's an absolutely brilliant book. And things like, you know, the Sarah Winman that I mentioned before, Still Life. I had already read all of her books, and I had loved Tin Man, which is just extraordinary, beautiful, quite small little book where every word counts. It's brilliantly written. And so when Still Life arrived, I read that in advance and loved it, and we had sold hundreds of it, and of course then did an interview with her. So it's you select partly by, oh, there's a new Sarah Winman, there's a new Barbara Kingsolver, you're going to read those first. But then you get interesting, unusual things, like one of the ones I've just read that has just arrived in stock is The Age of Vice, and it's by an Indian woman called Deepti Kapoor. It is extraordinary. I mean, the rep who sold it to me said, you've got to read this. It's gut-wrenching, but it's absolutely amazing. And I trust her judgment, and so I read it, and it is gut-wrenching. I would liken the experience of reading it to reading A Little Life. It's disturbing. It's about corruption in India, really, and a lot of cruelty in it. But it's just so well written, and you know, you can read stuff that's really tough in terms of content, but when it's totally absorbing and well written, it's a wonderful experience all the same. I'm just, in contrast to that, I can't even tell you the author, I don't think. I've just started a funny Indian one called The Bandit Queens, about a group of poor women in an Indian village who are going to get rid of their husbands by all sorts of, because the husbands are incredibly abusive, and it's a sort of awful but funny, really funny, a delightful contrast. So how do I select? I don't know. Out the back of the shop as well. I mean, you can see piles of books behind me. When your listeners can't see, but there's a pile of books behind me. There's reading copies out the back of the shop that all the staff borrow and take away. So some that I can't read, other staff will read and recommend. Mm. And it's what appeals to them, I suppose. I don't know. I think I'm a bit haphazard about how I select, but it's occasionally stressful, actually. You think, oh, there's so much I need to read, I can't possibly live long enough to read it all. Mm. But at the same time, it's a wonderful problem to have. I mean, what a joy to have too
what
much
a joy. Mm. Yes, indeed. I had a question about your asking your staff to help you out.
Yes.
And but
they read a lot. Mm.
They read a lot. Well, they would have to, yes, indeed. Yes.
Yeah.
So
they're very good at recommending things to people. And if a customer's picked up something that they haven't read, but my notes on it, they'll say, well, look, I haven't read this yet, but look, read what Carol said about it. She loved it. And I'm really honest. People trust my judgment. If I've said a book is absolutely extraordinary, wonderful, and I loved it, then I really mean that. But the staff read a lot themselves, and mm. they read some different things from me. And so that's really helpful as well. Yes. Mm. So between us all, we've got a good range covered. Yes.
So what do you think about the term women's fiction?
Well, I'd be wary of it, and that it's slightly derogatory. If it's women's fiction, it's suggesting it's you know, domestic and a bit trite or something. So yeah, I would just use the term literary fiction. Mm. And literary fiction written by women is usually outstanding. Mm. So, yeah.
Because there is There's a bit of a debate about the term women's fiction. Mm. And even publishers, I know particularly one publisher, actually still uses the term and categorizes incoming manuscript as women's fiction. But I would say women's fiction as probably schmaltzy,
lightweight,
introspective, domestic, or romantic. And that's not necessarily the case.
No, No, yes. I remember writing a letter to the listener many years ago defending Fiona Kidman, who's just the most magnificent writer and now has the stature in the New Zealand literary scene that she deserves, Dame Fiona Kidman. But in the early days, she was accused by the men of writing domestic fiction. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a letter to the listener saying that some of Fiona's novels dealt with relationship problems, and that was the role that women ended up having to take because the men didn't do anything about it. Mm. And she's amazing, you know, but in her early days was accused of being, you know, writing women's stuff, you know, domestic stuff that didn't really count. Mm. Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
Mm. So among all the publishers that you deal with and reps, do you think that women still take second place?
No, I don't anymore. Partly, but I mean, you think of what happened with all the, well, with the women's bookshops, but also the feminist publishers. There were, you know, when my bookshop began, there were lots and lots of women's publishers all around the world, feminist presses. They have almost, they've all gone apart from Virago, which is now part of a, you know, a much bigger publisher. And that happened because the men realised that the majority of book buyers are women, and that women wrote really good books, and there was money to be made out of them. So it's a commercial thing. If money can be made, they're going to treat women's books very seriously because they, you know, the bottom line counts. Mm. The other thing that's happened that's interesting with the lesbian books is that we still have a gay and lesbian section in the shop and a transgender section, which is growing, but a lot of mainstream, you know, books that just get categorised as fiction have queer characters in them. So you can't separate them out as much, really. So they're just all in together, really. Mm. Interesting. It's quite a common thing, I think, because it's normal. People have accepted that this is part of life.
Yes, exactly, part of life. So what advice would you have for people who imagine they might embark on owning a bookshop?
Oh, understand that it's really hard work. I don't know, read heaps. You have to be someone who reads and loves reading. Yeah, interesting. And you really, I think these days, have to have enough capital behind you to be able to order enough stock to start with. I mean, I remember when I started, I borrowed money from a particularly generous woman and I paid her back. I had almost no money to start. I remember one managing director for a publishing company saying to me, how can you possibly open a bookshop with so little capital you can't afford to buy enough stock? So I built it up gradually. But I think these days you would need to have enough capital to be able to order enough, a decent range of stock to start with. Mm. And I mean, there are costs involved in actually setting up your shelving and your computer systems and so on. I would say to them, look carefully at your computer systems. It all has to be online. The pandemic was really kind to us. So I've said to people, COVID was kind to us because we had a really good online system. We were already supplying books. We do a lot of special orders. We order books for people and we send them out by courier post, and we were already doing that. So when the shop shut down and people couldn't actually come through the doors, we just went overboard with the online orders. We couldn't cope with them. It was amazing, and I'm very grateful to that. People ordered online, and we had to come in. It started off with just me, and eventually three of us came in, and we spread the computers out across the shop so we weren't near each other, kept all the doors open, but blocked them so people couldn't come in. And just spent all day, every day, putting books into courier packs. And the courier guy would come and we'd put cartons of them at the door, and he would step back and he'd come and take them away. And he was astonished at how many books we were sending out all over New Zealand every day. So you've got to be able to do the online thing as well. And that's the way that a good bookshop, a little tiny one like us, will compete with all the big boys. Is to have someone orders a book, and people get it the next day, usually, certainly within 2 days. Yeah, it arrives in their letterbox. And you have to be efficient and good at that.
Yes, as with a lot of retail businesses responding to the moment-to-moment demands of the market and being responsible enough to be reliable.
Yes.
And do it immediately. There's no room for going up the back and putting your feet up and leaving it all to another day.
When you're asking about, you know, the amount of work and people thinking you sit around and read books, one of the things that takes up a lot of our time is the special orders. Locating where to get a book from, getting back to the customer and telling them how much it's going to be, how long it might take. Things have changed a lot with COVID in terms of deliveries as well. I've had to rethink the way I order, because books coming by sea, whereas they would have taken, you know, 10 days to 2 weeks coming from Australia before, they'll now take 6 weeks. And so I have to air freight things. It's a whole different ball game, really, in terms of that there are not as many planes flying, ships are taking much longer. It's the same with a lot of product, not just books, but it has altered the way to think about ordering things. I'm air freighting most special orders, and that's costing me. But I want to get the books for the people if we can, because our good service is what we're, you know, one of the things we're famous for.
Yes, and that has you maintaining your links with the wider community as well.
Yes.
Carol Bew, this has been a fantastic session. Thank you so much.
It's been lovely talking with you, Rachel.
It's just been such a nice session. You've been very generous, and I'm so glad you knew my questions almost before I asked, because
you're a very well-informed question asker, so you know what you're doing. You're not just an author, but you know about the book trade. So, and you've got a book forthcoming, which I will stock, and I'm looking forward to reading an advanced copy of it, Rachel.
Oh, I'm nerve-wracked now.
Oh, no. I suspect you know what you're doing.
Oh, I wonder.
Well, thank you with it anyway. Yes.
Thank you very much. All right.
Lovely talking with you.
So this is Rachel DeRay saying bye-bye to Carol Bew and Words from the Bubble. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.
If you're a writer or you know someone whom you'd like to hear interviewed on the show, you can send an email to info@mpr.nz. Or if you have feedback about the show, send it to the same address, info@mpr.nz. Just put Words from the Bubble in the subject line and it will flick through to me. By the way, if you're connected to the internet, you can listen to previous Words from the Bubble episodes by going to www.mpr.nz/show/bubble, or look online for Manawatu People's Radio NZ and you'll find it. Bye for now.